From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Joe Biden announcing his pick for his running mate, California Senator Kamala Harris. Now, that's going to be a ticket with an attitude. We'll talk about it later with Laura Trump, who is on the Women for Trump bus tour that launched yesterday. She joins us from the tour. And we'll also be talking more about Joe Biden's running mate and whether or not a VP pick really matters. Now, I didn't mention this yesterday, but Sunday I was in Southern California where I spoke to about 12,000 people in three services at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. Now, just down the road in another county where no indoor services are allowed at all, period, even when even the 100-person restriction. Pastor Rob McCoy and those who attended his service were under threat of citation by local officials if they violated Governor Gavin Newsom's order. They met in their sanctuary. In fact, his attendance doubled. This morning, Pastor McCoy was in court in Ventura County. Superior Court judge there issued an emergency temporary restraining order on Pastor McCoy and his church, saying they cannot meet until there is a full hearing at the end of the month. We'll talk with California State Senator Mike Morrell on that topic later. Meanwhile, in response to Governor Newsom's statewide ban on singing in churches and a severe ban or restrictions on actual meetings, San Luis Obispo County District Attorney Dan Dow has declared San Luis Obispo County a sanctuary county for singing and praising in our houses of worship. Not only does this offer hope and help to churches in California, but as leaders begin to stand up to the unconstitutional actions of Governor Newsom, it provides a lesson for Americans in civics and how we can lawfully push back on unlawful government. District Attorney Dow joins us in just a moment. Also, Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are irate that President Trump moved forward over the weekend with executive action designed to address the economic fallout of the coronavirus. The president has refused to give in to the left's wish list of items which are unrelated to the coronavirus.
We want to come up with a strong plan. The HEROES bill was not a wish list.
That was Senator Chuck Schumer on MSNBC's Morning Show with Joe Scarborough. Florida Congressman Ross Spano, who serves on the House Small Business Committee, has been advocating for the actions President Trump took over the weekend, putting in place a payroll tax holiday. He joins us later. Also, Dan Celia, President and CEO of Financial Issues, will join us later as well with insight into America's present economic picture and how President Trump's executive orders will impact the economy. Lots to cover today. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it's at T Perkins. And men, let me remind you, if you have not yet signed up for our Stand Courageous Conference that's taking place this Saturday, you can. It's not too late because while the event is being held live in Gonzales, Louisiana, you can participate because we're doing an online live stream, live streaming the event. All you have to do is register. Go to TonyPerkins.com and you can follow the links over. All right, California Governor Gavin Newsom is not backing off from his clampdown on churches. Now, churches in nearly two-thirds of the states are banned from indoor meetings. Now, the 20 counties where indoor services are allowed are restricted to either 25% of their capacity or 100 people, whichever is ever lower. And he has issued a statewide ban on singing. You can't sing. Now, I'm not making this up. Now, some pastors and some elected leaders are saying, you know what, enough is enough. And they're standing up and they're challenging the governor's edicts. One leader is the district attorney of San Luis Obispo County, who recently declared, and I quote, San Luis Obispo County is a sanctuary county for singing and praising in our houses of worship. District Attorney Dow, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Mr. Perkins. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Now, and could I just a bit of housekeeping at the beginning? You've probably never been here, but we pronounce it here San Luis Obispo.
Well, I've probably been through there, but not stopped. But I'll make that on my next trip. Let's talk about the in Ventura County today, where Pastor Rob McCoy was in court. Because his church is on that watch list of the governor, and prohibited from meeting. Has the governor gone too far?
Well, I certainly believe he has. I, first of all, certainly don't want to give the impression that I think people should be careless and flippant with regard to the health situation, the very real health situation with the coronavirus. But I believe that we have gone way too far when we're at a point where we are releasing tens of thousands of convicted state prisoners in prison only on serious violent and sex offenses, and we're releasing them to the tune of 17,000-18,000 into our community, and yet we want to make it a misdemeanor for citizens, residents of our state, to go into their house of worship and sing with their congregation. That is where our priorities are upside down, and I, in my county, have issued that declaration because I want the citizens in our county to know that they're free to worship, enter their houses of worship and sing and praise God, and they will not be prosecuted for it as a criminal in my county while I'm the district attorney.
Now, your county, if I'm not mistaken, is one of the 38 counties that's on the watch list that says there can be no indoor meetings whatsoever. Am I correct?
Yes, that's my understanding. The only caveat is that seems to change on a almost a moment by moment basis. My understanding is that presently we're still on that in that category.
So you have said that churches that meet in that county, they will not be prosecuted under your office. Now, can the state come in and prosecute?
Under California law, you know, the district attorney, myself, there are 58 elected DAs, one for every county. We have the responsibility and the duty to prosecute all California law offenses. The attorney general, though, by California Constitution, does have the authority to come in and take cases that we are not willing to prosecute. I do want people to know that there is that possibility that Javier Becerra, our state attorney general, would have that option. But I think it would be very unlikely for him to do that because they better get ready to take cases in every county across the state, and they just don't have the resources or manpower to do it. And quite frankly, I don't think the people of California, even given our current political supermajority in this state, I don't think that the people want their citizens, their fellow citizens, to be charged with a crime for really just abiding by their First Amendment right to worship and exercise their faith in a manner that they see fit.
So, District Attorney Dow, let me ask you this question. What prompted you to take the action that you did, declaring your county a sanctuary county?
Well, you know, I've been a part of a countywide faith group that has had county leaders as well as people from the faith community to talk about how we're going to reopen San Luis Obispo County. And before the governor issued the statewide restrictions, we had our own plan to reopen in a way that was safe and appropriate. And we took input from every sector, including the faith community. I was on that small task force. So I've been a part of the discussion about what makes sense for San Luis Obispo County. And on July 1st, when the governor issued the statement that said places of worship must discontinue singing activities, I knew at that moment my heart sank and that we'd gone too far. And so 3 days later, I was attending a July 4th Independence Day celebration at a local establishment and was asked to speak about freedom and about our founding fathers and about what it took to have the freedoms that we have. And so in my talk about the fact that millions and millions of Americans have served our nation in combat since the Revolutionary War to secure our rights, such as the right to worship, that we need to continue to assert that right and push back against government that turns its priorities upside down and really turns its back to those very important fundamental liberties. And so on July 4th, as a part of that speech that I was giving, I made that decision to go public with it. I hadn't really decided ahead of time that I would, but I did. And then almost a month later, the newspaper caught wind of it, saw the video online, and made a story of it. But I have to tell you that I believe absolutely it was the right thing to do. You know, I have discretion as the prosecutor, the one person that can bring all the public offenses in our county to court. My discretion is that if a case is not in the interest of justice to go forward, I shall not do that. And so that's my commitment here, is that to do so, to prosecute someone for exercising their faith by singing in their congregation, would fly in the face of justice. And quite frankly, it's a time when we should be encouraging people of all faiths to come together and pray, seek the help of the Almighty to find an end to the coronavirus and to pray for peace in our communities. And I personally believe that the Bible commands us to sing praises to our Lord. And that's something that I'm going to continue to do, whether a governor or anybody else says I can't.
Well, I think there's another, this is one of those learning moments, if you will, District Attorney Dow, because what you're doing is a concept that is not foreign at all to our form of government, our federalist system. Interposition is what the founders did when they did not rebel. They appealed through middle-level leaders, their own leaders here, so it was not disorderly. And what you're doing there is underscoring the importance of elections in electing men and women of principle, men and women who fear God, who respect their fellow citizens. And they are appealing to you, and you have said, yeah, you're right. You have constitutional right to meet, and I'm not going to prosecute you. And I think this should be reason for even voters in California. I talked to several of them. I was out there this weekend. And, you know, they get discouraged because California tends to always stay left when it comes to national politics. But this is an example of how local elections have very significant and real consequences. And so I commend you for doing your job and standing up. I guess I have to ask you, have you gotten pushback from anywhere, from the governor, his office, or the attorney general?
I have not heard any kind of response from the governor or the attorney general. Locally, in fact, the folks that brought the speech to the attention of the media certainly were upset about it. Quite frankly, the atheists in our community have written about it and have chastised me and that sort of thing. But I want to make clear, you know, what I've been criticized for is being told that I was I was giving favoritism to my particular faith, and that is absolutely untrue. I've made sure that my comments were such that people of all faith are encouraged. We have a mosque here in our community. We have several synagogues. There are faiths of every denomination in our community. And I, as I said, I call upon people of all faiths to take this as a moment in time to pray for peace. And certainly if those in the Muslim community or the Jewish community are gathering together and singing, certainly not going to prosecute them either.
District Attorney Dow, thank you so much for taking time out to join us today. And again, let me thank you for taking the stand that you are. I agree with you, and I'm glad to see it. And I think it should be an encouragement to not only the folks there in California, but really all across the country, that elections matter. Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, coming up, we're going to focus a little bit more on Pastor Rob McCoy and what's really happening in California. You might be surprised by the numbers. Also, going to get our next guest, State Senator Mike Morrell, to weigh in on Joe Biden's pick for VP. We're going to talk about that next year. Don't go away.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, as I mentioned this past weekend, this Sunday, I was at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills in Southern California, preaching, and there's about 12,000 people in three different services. But just down the road in one of the counties that's on the watch list that cannot meet at all, Pastor Rob McCoy held services. In fact, when a order was given that people would be cited, he would be cited, and people who came to church would be cited, the size of the congregation doubled. People drove for hours to be there. And this morning, he was in court where a Ventura County judge has put in place a temporary restraining order that says the church cannot meet until there is a full hearing on the 31st of this month. Joining me now to talk more about this and other topics, State Senator Mike Morales. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. Grateful for this.
It was good to see you this weekend. I know you represent that area, but you've been very vocal in the issues of religious freedom and taking on the governor. What's going to happen, do you think, in this case with Rob McCoy and the county there saying they're going to begin citing them if they meet?
Well, a couple of things. I don't know the end game, but we know God is in control and favors this particular side because he's the authority of the church. Governor Newsom's not the authority of the church. But one thing I do want to say, we are in a war here at the state Senate in the whole state of California. It's a cultural war. It's against the church. It's against the free markets. My friends across the aisle seem to have embraced the political ideologies of Marx and Lenin over those of Washington and Lincoln. So they're going to have an aggressive hostility towards the church. And so I don't know how the courts are going to weigh in. But one thing that I want to say to your listeners are we are in the war. As California goes, so goes the nation. This place, I believe, could perhaps be the battleground for the soul of America. And so we need your listeners' prayers because it is a war. And the thing is, they want to shut us down. And so I'm not sure how it's going to go. But the thing is they're marching. I mean, it's just kind of interesting to me. Governor and my friends across the aisle, Democrats, don't want churches meeting. They don't want people singing in church. But yet they blame this rise in COVID to families having barbecues in their backyard, and they say nothing about the tens of thousands of rioters and protesters in the streets. So, again, I think we got to get tough. We have to draw the line in the sand, plant the flag, and support our churches, support and get involved in civic responsibility, and realize that God's in control of the church. Nobody has authority over the church. And that our Constitution, fortunately, protects over that. And one more thing. Remember, Jesus told Pilate that, and remember, he was the king, the governor, that he had no authority over Christ. And so there is a dividing line there. And so the governor and his courts and his minions have no authority over the church.
But it certainly was on display this weekend at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, where I think people eager to attend and have fellowship with one another. I mean, the place was packed. And I also think people are ready to take that stand. But I want to take a look at the numbers for just a moment, Senator Morrell, because if you look at where California lines up with the rest of the states when it comes to per capita deaths as a result of the coronavirus, actually, California is pretty way down the list. I mean, you look at New Jersey is 179 deaths per 100,000 people. New York, 168 deaths. Connecticut, 125. Even my home state of Louisiana is 92. I got to scroll way down to get to California, which is, let me see, I think it's 26 per 100,000. So, I mean, you're in the lower echelons of deaths related to the coronavirus, but yet some of the most egregious restrictions on houses of worship.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is, look at this guy here in our state, as well as some of the other blue states. It's amazing to me. First of all, I take this virus very serious. I take all the precautions, but it's they've adopted a one size fits all. I mean, in New York it's a high density, right? And so they were wiped out with their COVID, right? And then L.A. is the one that has the majority of the deaths. So it's one size fits all. As you move out into the suburbs and the rural areas, you have less people, so there's less connections and contact. So again, it's a one size fits all, which you shouldn't. And if you look at Dr. I think his name's Scott Atlas off the Hoover Institute on the campus of Stanford, said that the average age, if I remember this correctly, of people passing away from COVID is 72 years old, usually with pre-existing conditions, right? And so we should be targeting our most vulnerable, right? In Riverside County, one of the counties I represent, I read a stat that said that no child between 0 and 18 has passed from this disease yet. And so, again, we should pinpoint and go after those vulnerable categories. But this is a one-size-fits-all, and I believe that they are politicizing this. They talk about science, but I will say this, Tony. When science and politics mix, it usually becomes very dangerous. And they're somehow politicizing this, which is wrong, very wrong.
Senator, very quickly, got 30 seconds left. You've worked with Kamala Harris, Joe Biden picking her as her running mate. Where is she on the political spectrum?
She's not a person who believes in limited constitutional government. She's a progressive, liberal, left-leaning Marxist, in my opinion. She wants the expansion of the bureaucratic state. I don't think she believes that public servants, but they're masters, and a very dangerous person to pick.
So you don't like her politics?
I don't like her politics. Like her, but her politics, she probably came through the...
We just lost him. Senator, if you can hear me, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to talk more about Biden's pick for VP. Coming up next, Laura Trump joins us on the Women for Trump bus tour. They launched it yesterday, heading to actually going to be crisscrossing key states over the next 84 days. She'll join us from the bus with an update of where they're going and what they'll be focusing on, and I'll get her to weigh in on Kamala Harris. That's next. Don't go away.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has released a new 3-part series titled Three Ways to Read the Bible. In this series, Patrina Mosley, FRC's Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy, shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth through studying and applying the Bible's text. Now's the time to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible and learning what it says about God, humanity, and the power of Scripture. During the season of isolation, devote time to the Lord and seek out His meaning for you. In times of crisis and any time, this blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through His Word. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but your heart. To learn more, visit frcblog.com. That's frcblog.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Let me remind you, men, if you'd like to be a part of the Stand Courageous Conference that's taking place this weekend, you can join virtually. It is going to be live streamed, and you can be a part of it no matter where you are. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, speaking of men, let's talk about women. Women for Trump, launching a bus tour yesterday. We'll be traveling, crisscrossing the key states over the next 84 days, talking about how the policies of President Trump have impacted women over the last 3 years, almost 4 years now. Joining me now to talk more about this is Laura Trump, senior advisor to the Trump reelection campaign and wife of Eric Trump, and she's on the bus tour. Laura, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Well, thanks so much for having me. Great to be on with you.
Well, I've got to ask you about the big news about Joe Biden picking Kamala Harris as his running mate, wanting to put a woman on the ticket, an African-American woman. It looks like it's going to be very easy to distinguish the difference between the positions of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, and Mike Pence when it comes to election time.
Yeah, well, here I thought the big news you were going to talk about was our incredible bus tour, but we'll get to that in a moment, I'm sure. Look, I think that from the very beginning, the Joe Biden vice presidential pick has been really just like a pandering move, quite frankly. I mean, the Democrats love to pander for votes. They love identity politics, and Joe Biden has jumped right on board with that. And he said from day one that he would be picking a woman and likely a minority woman to be his running mate. And, you know, they tried this trick in 2016, the Democrats, with women. They said that there was a woman on the ticket running to be the first female president of the United States, and all women should want to vote for that woman. As we know, she did not win, and Donald Trump is our president now. I think it's a little insulting, quite frankly, sometimes to women and to African Americans to think that just because somebody is on a ticket that looks like you or is a certain gender, you would want to vote for them. So I don't think that has ever been a solid move. Most of the time, people want the best qualified candidate to be the person running. That said, you're right. It is very easy to distinguish Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's policies versus Donald Trump and Mike Pence's successes that you have seen in the first 3.5 years of the Trump administration. And what we know is that under President Donald Trump, this country has seen the most economic success we have ever seen in the history of our country. Before the artificial interruption of the coronavirus, we had the lowest unemployment numbers in the history of the country. We had the highest stock market numbers in the history of the country. And in January, we even had 1 million more jobs than we had people to fill them. This has been a president that since day one has said, I want to look out for the American people and do what's right. You contrast that with Joe Biden and now Kamala Harris's policies. We're talking about the Green New Deal. We're talking about open borders. We're talking about defunding the police. These are things that would make the United States unrecognizable as a country, and we cannot allow that to happen.
Well, speaking of those policies, let's get on the road with the bus tour, because you are taking this Women for Trump bus tour around. And where are you going, and what are you talking about?
Well, we did in 2016 a bus tour all through this country, and I'll say that it was very grassroots at that point. We didn't really have a set agenda. We just knew that if we got out there and talked to people about the man that we knew Donald Trump to be and why we thought he'd be a great president, you know, we could convince them to vote for him, and you see what happened. So this time around, we're much more strategic in our efforts. We have the Women for Trump bus tour. It's a bright pink bus. It says Women for Trump on the side. You can't miss us. And we're traveling all across this country. We started in Pennsylvania. We've been there for the past 2 days. But we are going to canvass the United States in the next 83 days, all the way up until November 3rd, to make sure that we remind people about all the great things that have been accomplished under this president and his administration. Because sadly, if you listen to the mainstream media, oftentimes those things go unreported. We, in fact, at the campaign, couldn't even keep up with all that this administration has accomplished. So we created a website called promiseskept.com so we could keep up with it all. We have the Women for Trump bus, and we also have a Team Trump bus. They'll be crisscrossing the country, so you can go to donaldjtrump.com and you can find out where we're coming. We'll be in a neighborhood near you soon.
Very quickly, Laura Trump, before we run out of time here, you know, we hear in the media all the time that, well, you know, women are turning away from Trump. But actually, he has a lot of support among women because of his strong, definitive stand. And women in the workforce and when women in many ways have benefited from his policies.
Well, that's right. You see that we hit a 65-year low in women's unemployment under this president. You see that this president has done things like doubling the child tax credit. That's really benefited working moms and working families all across this country. Those sorts of things where it's actually helping people and it's not just all talk, no action politicians like days of the past are things that people pay attention to. And I think when you look at the fact that we have a lot of people in this country, including Joe Biden wanting to defund the police, Donald Trump is a law and order candidate. He wants to keep you, your kids, and your family safe. That makes a big difference to people.
It really does. And I hear it when I'm out in various parts of the country. Laura Trump, thanks so much for joining us today, and enjoy the road trip.
You got it. Thanks.
All right. Laura Trump with the Trump campaign on the road with the Women for Trump bus tour. And I do hear this. In fact, I was talking to law enforcement officials at the church this weekend in California saying, we appreciate the president's strong stand on law enforcement and others saying that. Hey, by the way, if you would like a list of what the president, this administration has accomplished, you can send me a text to 51555, the word actions. Actions to 51555, and I'll send you a complete list of things he's done. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about the actions he took over the weekend to stimulate the economy.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increased pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that'll help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/sexuality. Again, that's frc.org/sexuality.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com.
With horrifying acceleration in recent years, verified reports of murders, rapes, mutilations, and kidnapping of Christians in Nigeria have persistently increased. These attacks are frequently accompanied by the torching of homes, churches, villages, and agricultural fields. A July 15, 2020 headline reports that over 1,000 Nigerian Christians were killed in the first 6 months of 2020. This is in addition to 11,000 Christians who have been killed since June 2015. News stories about the assaults in Nigeria are rarely reported in mainstream media outlets. But when they are, they're regularly explained away as effects of climate change, local feuds, or religious wars for which both sides bear equal responsibility. For more information about the persecution of Christians in Nigeria, read FRC's publication, The Crisis of Christian Persecution in Nigeria, at frc.org/Nigeria.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, again, if you'd like a list of all that the president and his administration has accomplished on the core issues that we track, faith, family, and freedom, life issues, text me the word actions, that's plural, to 51555. I'll send you a link. It's a PDF, and you can share it with your friends. It's quite impressive when you see all that has happened. And speaking of that, over the weekend, President Trump taking executive action after Democrats refused to work with Senate Republicans to adopt yet another effort to help stimulate the economy. Now, they came back with more of the same, wanting to bail out poorly managed states. In fact, if you remember from I got a short clip from yesterday from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on MSNBC talking about this. Play that clip for us, Bobby.
The HEROES bill was not a wish list. We studied the needs of how to get enough money to open up schools safely, of how to do testing, of what the state and local governments needed, as to how we run the post office, how we have elections, how we feed the hungry, how we prevent people from being evicted. And we came up with a strong plan.
It sounds nice, but it was a wish list for a lot of left-wing ideas. And you know what? For once, we've got an administration that's drawing a line saying, no, we're not going to give in to you. Join me now to talk more about this is Florida Congressman Ross Spano. He represents the 15th Congressional District. He is a member of the House Small Business Committee, and in fact has been advocating for the actions that the president took over the weekend on the payroll tax holiday. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's so good to be with you.
Let me just first ask, was the HEROES Act a wish list of the left?
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, all you got to do is look at the things that are in it. You know, you're trying to nationalize election law. You're bailing out states that have been poorly managed, as you just referenced, over the last couple of decades, and on and on and on. Things that the Democrats would never, ever have had any opportunity of passing and now are using a crisis
right
to try and get these things passed. It's definitely a wish list. No question.
Not to mention bringing greater equity to the marijuana industry, which was a key
there
part.
There you go. I don't know. Yeah. No clue who was, that has to do with coronavirus.
I don't either. Maybe someone was smoking when they drafted it. I don't know. But anyway, let's talk about your idea that the president has picked up in over the weekend, the payroll tax holiday, which from September to the end of this year will, for those who make on a biweekly basis $4,000 or less, eliminate the payroll tax, which you'll see an immediate infusion of cash into those families' budgets. How impactful will this be?
I think it would be significant. And as you mentioned, it does something that we've filed legislation for. Our piece of legislation is called the KEEP Act, short for the Keep Employees Earnings Protected Act. And it would have actually, for a temporary period, stopped the requirement for both employee and employer funds to go to the government through payroll. But in any event, so yeah, the Democrats refused to work with the president on a very common sense way of thinking. I think of creating liquidity, immediate liquidity, and not having this money pass through the federal government and then coming back to us. But right. They wouldn't work with him. And so now what the president has done by executive order is he's created a scenario where the employers now are not going to be required to send this, at least the employee portion, the 6.2% that typically is paid to the government by the employee for Social Security benefit, for Social Security taxes. Those will not be required. Those will stay in the pockets of the American workforce. And so I believe this is going to be beneficial to the American worker. It's going to allow a little bit more flexibility and money in the pockets of the American worker. It's going to be helpful. And look, this is, you mentioned the president having to act and acting in many cases without Congress's cooperation. He did the same thing, as you recall, with the border crisis. Remember, the Democrats wouldn't work with him, and so he had to go to Mexico and work with third-party governments to solve the problem at the border of the crisis. This is, unfortunately, another one of these scenarios where the president is having to act alone. I think it will be effective, and hopefully it encourages the Democrats to come to the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they overplayed their hand on this, and maybe they're going to be forced to do so. I hope so. I hope they'll come back to the table and discuss these issues with us reasonably.
That is the word I'm hearing in some conversations with members of the Senate, that after the president just moved forward when the talks broke down on Friday and over the weekend taking this action, they're now wanting to have conversations. So I think they're just not accustomed to strong leadership on this. Now, Ross, I have to ask you this, because some Republicans have been critical of the president taking these unilateral executive actions. Do you think he is operating within the scope of his power and authority?
So, look, the Supreme Court has ruled in a number of different cases on the president's authority to act by executive order. So, is it the way I think the founders of our nation intended for our nation to enact law? No, I don't think so. Is it consistent with the current Supreme Court interpretation of what the president's powers are? I think it is. So unless and until Congress starts doing its job, unless and until the Supreme Court changes its interpretation of what authorities the president has through his executive powers, I think the president does have the authority to do this.
I think you're right. From a standpoint of, I don't think this is what the founders intended, but I think it's in keeping with what the courts have decided when it comes to executive authority.
Agreed.
But I think it's a sad commentary on where we are as a country, and where the Congress really is a reflection, I think, of the country in terms of the political partisan division, where you have like Schumer and Pelosi, who, unless they get to fund their left-wing ideas, they refuse to work to the benefit of the American people. And they just, it's either their way or they're not participating.
I agree with you 100%. I was having an earlier conversation just earlier today, Tony, with somebody who said, why are Republicans so resistant to communicating and working? And I don't think we are. I think, in fact, for the last couple of decades, we've been more than willing to work. But what happens is, the Democrats dig their heels in, and we end up coming toward them. We end up coming toward them, and we don't hold to our principles. And I think the time has come where Republicans just said, no, we're gonna hold our ground. And unless and until the Democrats begin to become more reasonable, we've got to begin to take these more draconian steps if we're gonna preserve our nation.
And I think what you have in the president and his immediate team, including his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, you have businessmen who know how to negotiate, and they are in that process of negotiating, and they're not going to sell their principles away just to get an agreement. And quite frankly, I find that refreshing, even if it even if it delays certain actions or limits the amount of action. I'm just tired of giving away the farm, which is what we have done as conservatives for far too long.
No question, Tony. And I think the American people are with us, and they understand that it's necessary at this time in the history of our nation.
Yeah. Congressman Ross Spano, thanks so much for taking time out to join us and for leading on these issues. I know that given Nancy Pelosi controls the gavel and what happens, that you're not going to accomplish many of these things, but there's other ways. And, of course, your leadership on this no doubt had an influence on others, which helped the president take the actions he did. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right. Congressman Ross Spano of Florida. All right. I want to continue this conversation. I want to get, a better picture of where America is economically and what impact these executive actions that were taken over the weekend might have. And joining me now to do that, I can think of no one else that would be better situated to do so, is Dan Celia. He is the president and CEO of Financial Issues Stewardship Ministries and has a nationally syndicated radio show. Dan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right, let me start with the first question. You know, it's been a month or two since we've talked. The jobs report looks good. We've had 2 months of historic gains in jobs. It's actually outperformed the expectations. Of course, the resurgence of the coronavirus probably dampened them a little bit, but they were still good. So where are we economically right now in America? What's the picture look like?
Well, the picture, if you dig down just a little bit, beyond the surface, and you don't have to dig very deep to see that the fundamentals of the economy are poised and ready. Fortunately for us, we were in a very, very good place economically when this all came about in January or February, probably the best place we've been in over 40 years. This was an incredibly strong economy. And those underlying fundamentals that we had back now have been put on hold, yes. They are paused a bit, but it's not going to take much to get them going again, thanks to the strength that this administration has put into the economy over the last 3 years. And if it weren't for that, we'd be in big, big trouble. But we're not in trouble at all. We just got to get this one-off global health crisis behind us. And I think we're going to pick up very, very quickly, Tony.
So Dan, it is not an accurate comparison at some point to other countries, because America going into this unforeseen pandemic and the impact that it had economically, what you're saying is because we had such a strong economy. In other words, it's like getting the coronavirus. If you're in good health and you're strong, it's not going to affect you as if you were, had underlying health issues. So those economies that are really struggling are those that had underlying issues when they went into this pandemic.
That's exactly right, Tony. You're hitting the nail on the head. And that's exactly what has happened. So you're looking at keep in mind, Germany was just about at recession. They would have gone into recession no matter what happened. Italy was already in recession. And all of the Eurozone, with the exception of the Northern European nations, were in big, big trouble. Japan was at best flat. So that has really been, and the analogy of being very healthy, getting the virus, is the perfect analysis, because that's exactly where we are. And that's why we're going to come out of this in very good shape. And that's why the media desperately needs to keep as much fear and negativity on top of this economy as they possibly can, because they know what's going to happen if they don't.
Yeah, it amazes me. It does amaze me. And it is this pandering and this creating of fear. And what it is, I want to go back and unpack this for just a moment, Dan Celia, because the reason we had a strong economy that will enable us to weather this storm, to come out of this coronavirus, is that we had the underlying policies of the Trump administration's, the deregulation, the tax cuts, that put us into that position. Bottom line.
That is the bottom line. You're 100% right. And that is exact. We would not be. Can you imagine where we would have been had we not had this president? And somebody said to me the other day, Dan, you can't give all of that to President Trump. You know, and I said, why? Who else would you like to give it to? It was his business sense and understanding of what needed to happen in our economy, surrounding himself with other business people that could get it done. That is exactly why and the only reason we are in this position of strength.
Well, Dan, and let's talk. Let me transition before we run out of time, because the president taking actions over the weekend because Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer would not work with them in a reasonable wave of another stimulus initiative. The actions the president took, what impact? Well, first off, unpack those quickly, and what impact will they have?
Yeah. So the payroll tax deferral plan is not what I had hoped for. I was hoping for a tax holiday or a period of time that we wouldn't be paying payroll tax, both employer and the employee. That's what President Trump wanted back in March. That's what I had hoped for and been hoping for. But he knew he wasn't going to get that. So now he's got a tax deferral. Now, what it means for the economy is it's putting money in the pockets of workers. It's incentivizing people to say, you know what, if I can make clear money or just about clear money on my pay, it's worth me going back to work. So it's incentivizing workers to get back to work, as well. So all that's good. The only issue with it is I think the president has also in this order giving instructions to the Treasury Department to look at how this can be forgiven.
Right.
And I think if that happens, then this is a really good shot in the arm for the economy. My concern is that people spend their money like we're expecting and hoping they do for the economy and end up with a tax bill if there's a remote, and I believe it's a very remote possibility, that we could have a different administration or maybe even not take back the House, then it might be difficult. So that's my only concern about it. And I wish it could have been a true holiday. I'll take it. This is a president that is trying to do everything that he can within his powers to do, since he's not getting any cooperation from Congress.
All right.
He doesn't care.
Dan, we got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Dan Seale, you can find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I agree with Dan, but I think it'll be hard for the next Congress to undo that, or next president. All right, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.